Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we now begin our coverage of the actual Mueller report, which actually got released online and to members of Congress about a half hour ago. I want to give you a programming heads up. All of it with Allison Stewart will be preempted today for NPR special coverage of the Mueller report. So that will be right after this show coming up at noon. Right now, I want to welcome our next guest, Andrew Prokop, senior correspondent with Vox, who has started to read the report. Andrew, thanks for giving us some time. Welcome to WNYC today.
Thanks very much for having me.
And I'm tempted to just read some paragraphs here from the executive summary, but do you want to give us any top-line take that you have right off the bat, because you've looked at it more closely than I have?
Yeah, so obviously this the file is 448 pages long. I have not gotten the chance to read through all of it yet, not even close. But one thing that is clear is that, you know, William Barr summarized this and gave a kind of very broad takeaway of, he said four times in his press conference this morning, some variation of no collusion. And, you know, it does seem that he was not misrepresenting Mueller's findings when it came to working with the Russian government on either the social media propaganda operation to help Trump during the campaign, or the particular hacking of Democrats' emails. And these are the two main ways that Mueller says that the Russians tried to interfere with the election. Now, what seems to be a bit more mysterious in this report as I'm reading through it is what exactly happened after the emails were hacked, and you know, what happened after the hacking by the Russian government, and they were eventually posted to WikiLeaks. And there's a lot of redactions here as to, you know, what may have gone on with potential Trump involvement there. And what Barr said in the press conference this morning is that Mueller found that there was no illegal Trump campaign help with disseminating the stolen emails. However, he also said that, you know, it wouldn't be illegal to simply publish or distribute these emails. It would only be the hacking that would be illegal. So there seems to be a lot of redactions about that still prevent us from seeing the full story of how the emails got to WikiLeaks and whether people like Roger Stone were involved in some way.
Let me read a little bit from the executive summary of part one, which is about conspiracy and coordination, what colloquially gets called collusion. Mueller writes, while the investigation identified numerous links between individuals with ties to the Russian government and individuals associated with the Trump campaign, the evidence was not sufficient to support criminal charges. Among other things, the evidence was not sufficient to charge any campaign official as an unregistered agent of the Russian government or other Russian principal. And our evidence about the June 9, 2016 meeting, that's the famous Trump Tower meeting, and WikiLeaks' release of hacked materials was not sufficient to charge a criminal campaign finance violation. Further, the evidence was not sufficient to charge that any member of the Trump campaign conspired with representatives of the Russian government to interfere in the 2016 election. Third, writes Mueller, the investigation established that several individuals affiliated with the Trump campaign lied to the office and to Congress about their interactions with Russian-affiliated individuals and related matters. Those lies materially impaired the investigation of Russian election interference. The office charged some of those lies as violations of the federal false statement statute. Former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn pleaded guilty to lying about his interactions with Russian Ambassador Kislyak during the transition period. George Papadopoulos, a foreign policy advisor during the campaign period, pleaded guilty to lying to investigators about, inter alia, the nature and timing of his interactions with Joseph Mifsud, the professor who told Papadopoulos that Russians had dirt on candidate Clinton in the form of thousands of emails. Former Trump Organization attorney Michael Cohen pleaded guilty to making false statements to Congress about the Trump Moscow project. And in February 2019, the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia found that Paul Manafort lied to the office and the grand jury concerning his interactions and communications with Konstantin Kilimnik about Trump campaign polling data and a peace plan for Ukraine. So just on that much of the executive summary, Andrew, he's detailing the lies in the second paragraph there that we already know have been charged and in many cases pleaded guilty to. But when he talks about insufficient evidence, insufficient evidence is such an elastic term, right? If he says the evidence was not sufficient to charge any campaign official as an unregistered agent of the Russian government, the evidence was not sufficient to support a charge of criminal campaign finance violations, and he went through that. That's not a statement of unequivocally clearing people. It's a statement that there wasn't sufficient evidence. I'm wondering how you read that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good point. And it's certainly reads quite a bit differently than what Bill Barr said in this press conference this morning, which is that there was no evidence of collusion or that, you know, the investigation proved that collusion didn't happen. Now, I will say that historically for the Justice Department, it's very rare for after an investigation for prosecutors or officials to come out and say this investigation proved someone was innocent. It's just more traditional legal lingo to say that the investigation did not establish that this happened, because you know it's difficult to prove a negative. That is one thing I'm going to be looking at as I read this report more closely. Like, was there evidence? Was there some evidence on certain of these topics that Mueller mentioned, but it just wasn't sufficient enough to bring charges? Or does he flat out assert that, like, he found no evidence asserting that there was improper conspiracy on certain topics? And there's a big difference between those two.
Have you been able to see yet how, if he does, Mueller characterizes the Trump Tower meeting and what that was from a legal or a counterintelligence standpoint?
So in the opening section, the introduction to volume one and the executive summary, he does go into the Trump Tower meeting, and what he writes there is that that according to his information, the Russian lawyer Natalia Veselnitskaya did promise dirt on Hillary Clinton in setting up this meeting, or her associates did when setting up that meeting, but that the Russian lawyer's presentation did not provide such information. That's a quote from the report. So basically, this kind of does vindicate what the Trump team has been saying about the Trump Tower meeting, that, this was promised. There were emails setting up the meeting where they said there was going to be Russian dirt on Hillary on offer. But then at the meeting itself, she didn't deliver and she didn't really provide that dirt. And so Mueller also writes that the evidence was insufficient to charge this as a campaign finance violation, because some legal experts had said that, you know, this was solicitation of a thing of value that could help a campaign from a foreigner who is not legally permitted to contribute help to a campaign. But Mueller didn't go down that road. He said there was not sufficient evidence to bring a charge on those grounds.
Did he address at all, in relation to what you were just discussing, attempted collusion? Because there was certainly an attempt by Donald Trump Jr., along with Jared Kushner and Paul Manafort, who are also in the room, to accept dirt on behalf of the Russian government on Hillary Clinton. And instead of going to the FBI and saying, hey, law enforcement, like some people have done in previous campaigns, this foreign adversary is trying to mess with our elections. And yes, it's on our behalf, but we know this is not in America's interest, so we're going to report it. Instead of doing anything like that, they said, I love it. They took the meeting. And the only disappointment was that they didn't come up with strong enough goods on Clinton. Why isn't that conspiracy? In the sense of, you know, if somebody tries to rob a bank, you can charge them with attempted bank robbery, even if bank robbery fails. They certainly, according to the evidence, attempted to conspire with Russia to harm the United States.
Yeah, that's a very good question to keep in mind as we read this report more closely. I think what Mueller does say is that the investigation established that the campaign expected it would benefit electorally from information stolen and released through Russian efforts. But, he goes on, the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in these election interference activities. So, I mean, this is something that we're just going to have to look at the details of the report, whichever ones aren't fully redacted, as to, you know, is there some evidence that such a conspiracy took place, or was it like more in the theoretical sense and in Mueller's view, like, you know, this was just kind of batted around and it never sufficiently developed to the to become something that could be the basis for a criminal charge. I mean, he may have been setting a high standard here into what would actually qualify. He does seem to have included even in a kind of, you know, cooperation of some kind would qualify as coordination or conspiracy in his views. But he does not assert that anything that happened rose to that level between Trump people and the Russian government itself.
Andrew Prokop, senior correspondent at Vox, thank you for giving us some early takes.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We have a lot more coming in now from multiple sources as more journalists are digging into more parts of this 400-page Mueller report, and we'll have more of that when we continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we continue to process the Mueller report, which got released at 11 o'clock. It's about 400 pages. Journalists from all kinds of news organizations are diving into it, and we'll bring on another guest, Jonathan Lemire, White House correspondent from the AP, in just a minute. I'll read you a few other tidbits coming in from other places. In the meantime, this is a Washington Post version that moved a few minutes ago by Devlin Barrett and Matt Zapatosky. The headline is, Mueller report says investigators struggled with whether Trump committed crime of obstruction. And it says a detailed report from special counsel Robert Mueller III said investigators struggled with both the legal implications of investigating President Trump for possible obstruction of justice and the motives behind a range of his most alarming actions, from seeking the ouster of former officials to ordering a memo that would clear his name. Quote from the report, the evidence we obtained about the president's actions and intent presents difficult issues that would need to be resolved if we were making a traditional prosecutorial judgment. At the same time, if we had confidence after a thorough investigation of the facts that the president clearly did not commit obstruction of justice, we would so state. Based on the facts and the applicable legal standards, we are unable to reach that judgment. That's a quote from the report. Then the Washington Post goes on, since Mueller concluded his investigation last month, a central question facing the Justice Department has been why Mueller's team did not reach a conclusion about whether the president obstructed justice. The report said investigators felt they have, quote, sufficient evidence to understand relevant events and to make certain assessments without the president's testimony. And it goes on from there. It says Mueller made abundantly clear Russia wanted to help the Trump campaign and the Trump campaign was willing to take it. Here's another quote from the report. Although the investigation established that the Russian government perceived it would benefit from a Trump presidency and worked to secure that outcome, and that the campaign expected it would benefit electorally from information stolen and released through Russian efforts, the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. The special counsel also wrote that Manafort and Konstantin Kilimnik, Russian government-related person, would require candidate Trump's assent to success. They discussed, this is a quote from the report, they also discussed the status of the Trump campaign and Manafort's strategy for winning Democratic votes in Midwestern states. This is Manafort and what he lied to Mueller about, sharing polling data with this Kremlin-linked Russian Kilimnik. Months before that meeting, the special counsel writes, Manafort had caused internal polling data to be shared with Kilimnik, and the sharing continued for some period of time after their August meeting. And again, they discussed the status of the Trump campaign and Manafort's strategy for winning Democratic votes in Midwestern states. Here's a tweet from Juan Manuel Benitez at New York One, something he noticed in the report. The president's efforts to influence the investigation were mostly unsuccessful, but that is largely because the persons who surrounded the president declined to carry out orders or accede to his requests. That's in the report, so that would seem to indicate attempted obstruction. And here's one more tweeted by a listener reading, in approximately September 2015, Michael Cohen obtained approval to negotiate with Russian real estate company from candidate Trump. Cohen also discussed the Trump Tower Moscow project with Ivanka and Donald J. Trump Jr. And remember, Michael Cohen pleaded guilty to lying to Congress about the Trump Tower project. With me now is Jonathan Lemire, White House correspondent for the Associated Press. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Brian. How's your day going?
Oh, it's nothing going on very much. So I don't even want to lead you here. We've been picking up different threads that we could pick up from our various sources. What are you looking at most closely at the moment? What's most interesting to you?
Well, I mean, as you said, I mean, this is obviously a huge document. We're all racing our way through it. I think each page carries with it some sort of revelation. I mean, where I was reading was the section about Don McGahn, who the president instructed on more than one occasion, according to his testimony that's in the report, to end this investigation, to instruct the Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, or Attorney General at the time, Jeff Sessions, to fire Robert Mueller and end the probe. McGahn refused in his testimony here. He said that I'll read from it a little bit. He called his lawyer, drove to the White House, packed up his office, prepared to submit a resignation letter with the chief of staff, told Priebus, that was the chief of staff, Reince Priebus, that the president had asked him to, quote, do crazy, I'll leave out the next word, starts with an S, and then informed Priebus and Steve Bannon that he was leaving. The report goes on to read that he did not want to be party to something that he compared to the Saturday Night Massacre.
So Don McGahn, the White House counsel, was asked by Trump, according to Robert Mueller, to fire Robert Mueller, and McGahn didn't want to be a party to that, and he resigned.
He threatened to resign and then was later then talked out of the resignation as the president then walked back his request to fire Mueller. Of course, he never did fire Mueller. Mueller was allowed to complete his position. McGahn stayed on the job for a number of more months before eventually leaving of his own accord, not connected to this. It was, I believe, after the Judge Kavanaugh hearings. But it speaks to a moment, though, that one of those instances that we heard from today that Robert Mueller looked into in exploring the possibility of obstruction of justice, but of course did not, charges were not eventually filed. And I'm sure you've also read to this point that Mueller states plainly in the report, I'm not quoting here, but more or less says that if we found evidence to conclude definitively that the president did not try to obstruct justice, we would plainly state so. And they did not do that. So they very much, you know, made it clear that while they were not recommending a charge of obstruction, they also very much could not say that the president did not obstruct justice either.
Yeah, here's another few words. This was posted by the New York Times a little while ago as an excerpt with the headline, Mr. Trump likely fired James B. Comey for refusing to clear the president's name. And here's the quote from the Mueller report. It says, substantial evidence indicates that the catalyst for the president's decision to fire Comey was Comey's unwillingness to publicly state that the president was not personally under investigation, despite the president's repeated requests that Comey make such an announcement. So that's interesting. And I think we kind of already knew that.
Yes.
But, and I don't know that that rises to the level of obstruction of justice, because Comey had actually told Trump that he was not a subject of investigation. I think at that point he wasn't, and Trump was upset with Comey only for refusing to state that publicly, correct?
That is correct. That was a request that the president made a number of times. I believe Comey outlined a lot of this in his book that came out last year, saying that the president wanted him to go public with that information, that he wanted to clear the cloud that was hanging over the White House, and Comey believed that would be improper and didn't do it. But it was weighing heavily on his mind once Comey was fired and Robert Mueller was appointed to special counsel. An excerpt I'm just looking at here, and I believe it's actually the top of the Washington Post story at the moment, is the president telling in May 2017 in a meeting, saying that, quote, everyone tells me if you get one of these independent counsels, it ruins your presidency. Later on saying, this is the end of my presidency. So that would think, as much as, you know, just give you some clue as to what sort of threat he felt from Mueller, which led into, connect some dots here, to eventually make the move to request him again to fire Mueller. Now, he didn't. It didn't happen. But it's telling, because so much of the idea of obstruction of justice, why charges were not recommended, was that Mueller's team said they could not establish intent of mind. That's really important with obstruction of justice. And they could not do that in part because they only received written answers from the president. He never did agree to a sit-down interview. But the special counsel never followed up with a subpoena to require him to do so.
And in fact, Politico just tweeted that Mueller's team, according to the report, believed that it had the, quote, authority and legal justification to issue a grand jury subpoena for Trump's testimony, but chose not to, quote, in light of the substantial delay, unquote, that it would cause at a late stage of the investigation. So that's kind of like admitting, we really weren't able to get everything that we needed to establish Trump's state of mind and whether he had corrupt intent, because it would have taken too long to do it.
Yeah, that's a very fair reading of that. That's mine as well. And let's remember now that there, of course, have not been any charges filed, this is more than anything, it's a political document, and it's all about trying to frame its contents. And I think, and I'm sure you've covered this on your show already today, what a remarkable press conference that was from Attorney General Barr, stepping forth before the cameras, before the press corps, and delivering his assessment of the report, explaining the mechanics of what's inside, but also sort of explaining his conclusions, and doing so before the report was made available to anyone, reporters or members of Congress. We know that some of the president's lawyers, the White House's his personal attorneys, including Rudy Giuliani, have had access to the document since Tuesday. They couldn't bring it with them, but they could view it in a secure facility at the Department of Justice. They saw it on Tuesday and again on Wednesday, but no one else did. And this allowed, if you're looking at this in pure political terms, what Barr did today was, again, try to shape the narrative, much like his critics say he did with that four-page summary a few weeks ago, that he put that out before we saw anything else. And then today was more of that, that it was the White House trying to define this conversation on their terms. We saw the president has tweeted about it a dozen times already today, including that Game of Thrones image literally seconds after Barr walked off the podium. And then at an event in the White House a short time later, the president declared that it was a good day, that he felt that this was validation to his claim that there was no collusion, him. There was no obstruction. And then he said he didn't want any other president to have to go through something like this.
Yamiche Alcindor from PBS tweets that the Mueller report says part of what guided their investigators was the legal opinion that sitting presidents should not be indicted. The report states that Mueller's team, quote, accepted that legal conclusion for the purpose of exercising prosecutorial jurisdiction. However, Yamiche also tweets, Mueller's team was also guided by the opinion that a president, quote, does not have immunity after he leaves office, and goes on to say, we conducted a thorough factual investigation in order to preserve the evidence when memories were fresh and documentary materials were available, unquote. So that's pretty interesting. By implication, Mueller seems to be planting a seed for potential future prosecutions of Trump once he leaves office.
That is interesting. That's not one of the pages that I've encountered just yet as we're speed reading this. But that is certainly well known that there is a belief out there that presidents perhaps can't be criminally charged while sitting in office. There's some Trump critics that suggested, well, that's a main reason why he wants to run for a second term, to extend that time in which he can't be found criminally liable. But that is interesting. You know, we certainly know that there are investigations continue apace in the Southern District of New York and other jurisdictions. It does seem that Mueller, though, if my reading on that is as yours, is trying to enshrine some of this evidence that perhaps could be drawn on down the road, which would make the president's claims today of total exoneration perhaps premature.
And I guess if the top line conclusion is that Mueller neither was indicting Trump on obstruction nor exonerating him of it, that line, those last few lines that we just quoted, would seem to indicate that Mueller himself believes maybe he did commit obstruction of justice, but he can't indict him on it anyway. Though I should say, to be fair, that it does look like he was weighing complicated facts of evidence and law, as he put it, to decide to leave him kind of torn as to whether criminal obstruction was committed. Do you think that's a fair statement?
Yeah, no, I think it is. I believe that he also suggested that Congress could have the ability to make a decision on something like obstruction, would have a voice in that process, which of course did not come to be, because Barr and Rosenstein made their own, the Attorney General and Deputy Attorney General respectively, made their own conclusions.
Well,
all they
can do is make a criminal determination. Congress, of course, can make its own determination for the purposes of impeachment if they decide to do that, which is a political process. They can still charge him with a high crime or misdemeanor of obstruction of justice, and it doesn't have to meet the same legal standard that William Barr interprets it as not having met. And that process could go forward if they choose for it to go forward. Just one thing in our remaining 40 seconds or so, all these people who lied about their contacts with Russia, Trump, Jr., Jared, Flynn, Manafort, Papadopoulos, Cohen, Sessions. If there was no underlying crime, what were they lying to cover up? Does he address it?
We have not seen that yet in the selections that we're racing through. But that has been one of the questions that has hung over this entire investigation. Like, if there was no actual conspiracy or no deliberate attempt to collude, which Mueller makes clear there was not. He did not find that their evidence was. If there was no attempt to do that, why all the lies? And was it just bumbling? Was it just people who are used to lying and lying, therefore they lied some more? That is stuff that we're going to find out in the days and weeks ahead. But there were, as much as this, as thorough as this report is, there are absolutely going to be questions that remain.
Right.
And I think the Democrats hope a lot of them are answered when the Robert Mueller appears before Congress, they hope, within the month.
Jonathan Lemire, White House correspondent for the Associated Press. Thanks a lot.
A pleasure.
And our coverage continues in a minute.